All right, everyone, let's get the show started. Welcome to our DevOps office hours. It's June 3rd, 2020. My name is Eric Osterman, and I'll be leading the conversation. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator, and that means that we help companies own their infrastructure in record time by building it with you and then showing you the ropes. If that sounds interesting, head over to cloudposse.com/quiz to get started. Again, that's cloudposse.com/quiz to get started. Today, the format will be a little bit different. We actually have a guest speaker joining us who is a subject matter expert on all things cloud formation. So please get your questions ready in the Office Hours channel so we can answer those. For those of you new to the call, the format is very informal. My goal is to get your questions answered. So feel free to unmute yourself at any time if you want to jump in to participate. If you're tuning in from our podcast or YouTube channel, you can register for these live and interactive sessions by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, that's cloudposse.com/office hours. We host these calls every week. We'll automatically post a video recording of this session to the Office Hours channel, as well as follow up with an email that you can share with your team. So with that said, let's kick this off. I'd like to announce, first of all, our guest speaker today, which is Chuck Gaiman, and he is actively working on writing a book for Manning on CloudFormation, and the book's called AWS CloudFormation in Action. If you stick around to the end, you may be eligible to score some free giveaways on that book, as well as other Manning stuff, so stick around. He's been actively building applications on AWS since around 2012 and operated both as a cloud architect, CTO, as well as technical blogger. He's been a hands-on developer for many years and holds a couple AWS certifications. So he may be able to answer your questions today if you have any related to AWS CloudFormation. So welcome, Chuck. Oh, you're muted, by the way, Chuck. Sorry, I muted everyone. I'll unmute you. There we go.
Excellent. Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Welcome. So you are our first honorary kind of guest speaker. We've been doing these office hours for a year now, and it's about time to bring in some guest speakers who are subject matter experts in areas that we don't know everything about. So I just wanted to, grease the wheels here and ask a few questions to get the conversation started, and then we're going to open this up to everyone else on the call if you guys have any CloudFormation questions. So with that said, Chuck, how'd you come up with the idea that you wanted to endeavor to write your own book on CloudFormation?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Well, I never imagined that I would be writing a book on CloudFormation, actually. So last year, I wrote a blog for my employer, which is Perforce Software, which a lot of people probably haven't heard of, but and it was about infrastructure as code. And I happened to be doing a lot with AWS. And so I used CloudFormation as examples in that blog. A Manning editor, an acquisition editor, stumbled on it and reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to write a book on CloudFormation? I'm like, whoa.
Hadn't even considered that. Yeah.
No. And then we went back and forth over a significant period of time. I wrote a proposal, looked at it, it landed at this book, which is really cool.
So this book is now something that you've been working on for how long now?
Officially since November of last year.
It's almost half a year, yeah.
Yeah, and it's in this Manning early adopter program right now. Okay. So it's a pretty fascinating way they work. They've done a ton of books. I think their books are really high quality. I've read them a lot. Not only do they have like a panel of reviewers for what I write, the content goes into this Manning early adopter program, MEEP, they call it. And, um, And I get feedback from people who are reading it. So people buy the book, usually.
Real-time feedback to put that back into the book before it's finished.
So. It's fantastic, yeah. So
is it safe to say that actually today is going to maybe influence this book a little bit based on questions perhaps that people ask or what people are interested in?
For sure. I mean, I've already gotten so much great feedback on what I've written. And you know, I've gotten like from people 3 pages worth of errata, you know, typos. Yeah. And things. I mean, it's fantastic. It's so great to get the feedback.
Awesome. So let's jump into some questions that I have. And then I'm not going to cover all of these on the screen before we get to everyone else's questions. I just want to kind of, get the flow going the right way. And first, for those who aren't familiar yet with like AWS, maybe they're using more Kubernetes or Azure or things like that. What is CloudFormation? And in a nutshell, maybe in a, you know, like 5 sentences or so.
Cool, yeah. So CloudFormation is the native infrastructure as code tool built into AWS, and it's been around since 2011, so it's pretty, you know, it's right up there with you know, I guess Puppet is around that same time, and true, you know, things, Ansible is older, but not much older. And it's a declarative tool, which we can talk about for more than 5 sentences if we want to, but that uses either JSON or more recently YAML to define AWS resources that you want to deploy. So that's it. And
so it's safe to say it's a tool in the category of things like HashiCorp's Terraform, Pulumi,
yes,
things like that.
Okay. Yeah. I would say those are the top three. Right. I mean, this has hundreds of thousands of people using it, interestingly, CloudFormation, because it's free and built into AWS. You're an AWS customer.
It'd be really interesting to know, because I mean, I think I can speak for a lot of us on this call. We operate in a little bit of a bubble. And for everyone else, you know, I prime Chuck on this, that, you know, many of us are Terraform users. And have had bad experiences with CloudFormation in the past, but I think it's turned a corner and maybe it's a time to reconsider it for certain use cases. So, with that said, actually it leads into another question I have here is like, what do you think has changed so much in CloudFormation, that maybe some of us, myself included, who had a bad taste with CloudFormation in the beginning, could reconsider it?
Yeah, so it's a great, really hard question. you know, like if you're using Terraform now, right? There's no way I'm going to convince you to use CloudFormation, right? But you know, if you look at the Terraform documentation, you know, they tell you how to hook into CloudFormation, and there are definitely things that you can do. You know, with both of them, I would say possibly serverless things and, you know, other resources on AWS.
I think I'd like to add my own color a little bit to that.
Sure.
And it doesn't contradict necessarily what you're saying either. It's just, so one of the things that people who listen to this, you know, to Office Hours hear me talk about all the time is this: the 4 layers of infrastructure. The first being your foundational infrastructure. Second being your platform, like whether you use ECS or Kubernetes or things like that. Serverless could also be your platform. The other is your shared services. So things that you need to exist before you get to deploying your applications, like maybe Jenkins or monitoring pieces. And then lastly, it's the application layer. And for people doing Terraform, I think we've been thinking about it like we want layer 1 through 4. If we want one tool for the job, we only want to use Terraform for that. We don't want to have it get splintered off into all these other languages. But I've had kind of a mea culpa on this lately and thinking that, well, maybe there's certain situations where that layer 4, maybe we want to start, maybe we don't want to be so exclusive and maybe we want to be more inclusive of a tool like CloudFormation. Not necessarily writing raw CloudFormation, and we'll get to that too, but maybe you're doing stuff like CDK or serverless, which compile to CloudFormation that we can deploy. So yeah. I think they can coexist.
So I think you totally nailed it, of course. The CDK, which has really only been out since last fall also, right? Is blowing up right now. And it's blowing up because, actually a lot of reasons, right? One is that it gives more people access to the infrastructure than previously possible. You really have a learning curve with CloudFormation. I mean, one thing I was reading about recently, to compare, you know, in prep for this talk, Terraform and CloudFormation, you know, it's very, very hard to like loop in CloudFormation as an example, you know, because it's JSON. It's like, you know, you don't even know what order really the template is going to execute in. You do over time, but officially you can put stuff all over the template and it's just going to execute in the order that matters, right? You can pause, but looping is really hard. And yeah, so I was like looking at Terraform and I seem to recall that it has a looping construct in the
now it HTML. Does. Well, I mean, technically we had counts, but now we finally have for loops and that's very popular.
So you know, you don't have that, but you do in the CDK, right? And in the CDK, you can use JSON or C# or Python to write infrastructure as code. And in fact, you know, you can do, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, you know, it's so cool. 10 lines of Python gives you, you know, ECS deployment, right? Yeah. With, you know, all your containers blown out, right? So it's pretty impressive. And that is causing, it's also open source, right?
Yeah.
And there's this guy, Korfman, and if you want, I'll paste a bunch of the links.
Yeah, let's. We should share any links in there. Also, I just want to pause for a second because I just realized that we haven't really formally introduced what CDK is. CDK is, you know, do you want to introduce CDK?
Yeah, it's Cloud Development Kit, and it's on GitHub, and it's open source, and it's attracting a big community, you know, not as big as what Terraform has in terms of open source, but lots and lots of people. Clearly, AWS has put a tremendous amount of energy into it as well. And all of CloudFormation, I think that's a big difference, is that this thing, you know, has become a first class tool within AWS, right, for doing these things, right?
And this is why I think I've kind of done an about face a little bit on my opinion on CloudFormation, is hearing so frequently from developers at companies who want to do that last mile of infrastructure for their app. Maybe they just need a bucket. Maybe they just need some IAM roles or policies or things like that. Yeah. And they aren't Terraformers, but you know, they're fluent in, you know, JavaScript or Python or C#, all these other things. And they just want something that's easy that they get, that they understand. And this is why I thought, this is why I kind of like the CDK approach maybe for some of that stuff.
I mean, it definitely is a work in progress, as is so much software today, especially open source software, right? But there are people contributing to it and making it better out there in the community, which doesn't really happen with CloudFormation. That's done by, you know, a secret team at AWS.
Right. That's totally occasionally. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty fascinating.
Why don't we see if, I haven't checked the Slack channel. Let's see if anybody has posted something in office hours here to ask.
I asked the question in the Zoom chat.
Oh, in the Zoom chat.
I saw one pop up.
Okay.
There it is. Brian. Yeah, so.
Let's read the question first.
What's the difference between CDK and something like Python, Boto 3, something that IAC solved that was a huge issue with provisioning via BOTO3 as managing state. CDK make managing state easier. You know, I'm not sure about the second part, right? I can definitely tell you what the difference is to BOTO3, is that with BOTO3, you're using the AWS SDK, right? The APIs, it's an SDK for the APIs, basically, is how I would describe it for Python, right? But with the CDK, what happens is it is code, the CloudFormation code is actually generated, the YAML is generated by it. And you actually can have the source code so you can see how it's generating the code, right? If you're a developer, obviously, but there are gonna be, you know, it's all gonna be used by developers. Only some are going to be interested in getting into the guts of it and finding out how the sausage is made. Let's put it that way, right? If that makes sense.
Well, so, and like with BOTO, like you can use BOTO to call CloudFormation, of course. And I'm not sure if that's what the question was, or using BOTO to call the raw cloud APIs. Of course, calling the raw cloud APIs means that you're responsible for managing the state.
Right.
Is like what you're saying, that CloudFormation manages for you.
Right. So I think, you know, the answer might be in terms of some resources, yes. I have not considered that deeply. So, you know, I can't really answer it well.
So. And so Brian, CDK, and just to drive this point home, so CDK, actually all it does is generate CloudFormation. So all state, all the complexity, all the logic is done ultimately by CloudFormation. It's as though if we use the higher level like Python to generate
Terraform,
HCL, and then ran the HCL.
It's funny because like people write markup language to avoid having to write the same type of code, and then now you write the code to generate that markup language. It's pretty funny.
It is, and this is a frustration I have. Like, you know, we've been down this path with Jenkins, right? Like, first it was imperative pipelines with Groovy, and then everyone realized that doesn't scale, and then we wanted declarative pipelines, and then it's kind of this happening in infrastructure as code. Like, we tried using BOTO, we hated that, then we moved to Terraform, and then people say, well, Terraform is too limiting, I want to have the code again, and it's like,
I mean, it's. And I don't know that it's designed to scale either. I mean, it's Node and JavaScript is what this CDK is. It's generating code. So it's pretty interesting. I mean, not that isn't scalable. People have scaled it pretty
well. Right. So next question here from Dan Overholt. We have a series of CloudFormation scripts that collectively add up to our stack. Only one contains a series of nested scripts. We would like to be able to combine the 20 plus CloudFormation scripts into one execution to create a new dev stack and subsequently be able to destroy that complete stack when necessary. Is this an appropriate use for the service catalog, or what is the recommended approach for doing that?
Interesting. So I would say that, I don't know if service catalog would have an impact on that, if you'd be able to do that. Now, there is the registry and the ability to put custom resources to the registry. I don't know if this would fall into that category either.
What is the registry?
Well, the registry it's not really for CloudFormation templates. It's for resources, right? And now there's starting to be a public registry where you can put formerly custom tools into a place where people can grab them and use them, right? Mm. So you know, a good example is. Well, there aren't really great examples, but But there are several vendors who, you know, previously, you know, they published, here's how you do this. You've got to add that code into your templates and access their, you know, their capabilities through custom resources, i.e. via APIs, right? Mm-hmm. But now you can go grab it and just access the equivalent of an intrinsic function, right? Mm-hmm. So that's that. But so to answer this question, so you've got 20 nested stacks. I wish I had this in front of me written, but is it in Slack?
Yeah, the questions in Slack. And we don't have to answer here. And also, one other thing, we can also turn this over to the floor if anybody has a direct answer to this. We're about 21 people on the call right now.
Okay, let's see.
Yeah, any takers?
Just to clarify, it's not, they're not all nested. I just put that as a point of clarification. There's one that has, one of the templates has nested templates in it, but there's really, you know, I did like a template for say my S3 buckets, and then I did a template for ECS services, and then I did a template for, you know, database, RDS, all this kind of stuff. And I just want to take the whole thing collectively and crank up a whole stack.
But this is where CDK would shine, no?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's quite possible CDK could do this, but also just accessing CloudFormation from Python, if you're into Python, via the API would let you do that for sure. You could absolutely do that. Then you've got to write something and maintain that thing. But people, I think that's how people generally do that. And thank you for saying it. It was good, and reading it was a little bit easier too. So,
so my question then about that is why isn't nesting all 20 stacks into one master stack kind of thing?
that actually may work, but you know, the updating could be tricky with 20 stacks, right? Changing and updating. I mean, you know, I'm not sure I've done that many nested stacks. And I think that might even be the limit of the number of stacks you can have nested, which I should know because it was just in the chapter of my book that is coming out this month.
So you mean that one parent
back on the thread of this question, if anything else comes to mind. One other thing I just want to clarify, understand better would be, is this like for preview environments, or would this be your production release process to have all those stacks go out at the same time?
It could be in the future, maybe, for production, but the idea really was to crank up a dev stack to test some new thing we were doing. Maybe we had an outside developer that wanted to work on something and needed a full stack to test with. And I didn't go the approach of making one or two huge YAML CloudFormation templates. I made several small ones, right? And so I'm trying to combine that into one manageable unit, if you will.
And it sounds you're just writing raw CloudFormation though, right? You're not using a tool in between?
I haven't yet. I've been looking at maybe Terraform, actually managing the CloudFormation, you know, using their Terraform bit they have for that. And maybe that would be the approach. But to get back to the nesting, that gets to be a nightmare with parameters, where you have to take the parameters and pass them into the nested piece. And if there's more nesting, you have to pass the parameters again and again. And, you know, that's my issue there with nesting everything.
So parameters. One thing you can do with parameters is, and I don't know if you've tried, you may have tried this and it may have other limitations, but you can, in terms of what you're doing, is that if you can use a transform with the parameters and just bring them in like right at the top of the primary stack that you're nesting into. And that's a possible, have you tried that?
I'm not familiar, no. The transform, you said?
Yeah, there's a, you can actually use a transform to do something that's similar to an import, but it would bring, you could, I've done that, bringing the parameters in, because like you said, like the parameters sort of need to be there before the stack is executed, and they're not there potentially when you're, you know, you're bringing the stack in, right?
I'll look at that. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So we have another question here from Alex. And Alex, I know, is a Terraformer. And this explains a little bit why maybe he likes Terraform. But Alex says, I've used CloudFormation extensively at past roles, but my recollection is that if a resource was not initially created with CloudFormation, you couldn't really manage that resource with CloudFormation ever in its lifetime. Recreation might be fine for ephemeral stuff, but data stores and things like that, it's not always practical. How does CloudFormation handle the kind of scenario where you might need to import an existing resource into the stack?
So another pretty recent addition to the toolset is an import feature.
No way.
Yeah, no yeah. Way. Huh. So, and there's a pretty good sized list of things it can import. It's not absolutely everything, but yeah, you've got like create a stack.
What's that import process look like? Is that something you run the CLI tool with, or is there like a way to describe that in CloudFormation itself?
You cannot, it's not in CloudFormation itself, but you can do it from the command line and from the API and from the console even, actually.
That's cool.
So,
do you know if RDS is one of those resources?
I believe so. Yeah. Oh, cool.
I wish I was clever enough to know that they had added that. I just wanted people to know about it. But I missed that announcement somewhere along the way.
Oh, yeah, and I don't remember the timing on it. Again, that's actually in Chapter 5 in the Managing Change part of the book. I mean, it's great for your drift situations, as well as I've created this thing separately and I want to bring it into this new project that I'm working on. So.
Yeah, I've had situations in the past where I've had to do a point in time recovery of a database or something similar to that, and then all of a sudden I need to manage that object longer than a temporary lifetime.
Yeah,
and then you're stuck with a dirty stack that like doesn't represent reality.
Yep. Yeah, so you looked like you found it there. Yeah, so.
Yeah, so I just shared a link to that announcement. It looks like it was announced in November last year.
Yeah,
pretty recent.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And
I was knee deep in Terraform at that point. So.
yeah, it's neat.
That's cool. Let's see. Let's go
Thanks,
back.
Thank here. You.
Let's go back here to Office Hour C. All right. So those were those two CloudFormation questions. Oliver, I'll get to your EKS questions maybe towards the end. See if we can answer that. Since the focus is CloudFormation.
Good. Yeah, for sure.
On that. All right, let's see here. Going back to my kind of notes here, because I was really curious about CloudFormation too, which is why I was excited to have Chuck here on the show. So so here's a big one, I think, for me. It's like a big part of the success of languages is the ability to have like a distribution mechanism. So let's say, you know, for Docker or Dockerfile, it's the registry. For NPM, it's the module registry. For Terraform, it's the module registry. Does something like that exist now in this CDK ecosystem now that we're using like a proper language for doing CloudFormation?
Yeah, so I would have to say not not apples to apples, right, at this point. But another new thing is this registry that I mentioned, and it seems to be primarily targeted at AWS partners. So, you know, there's like Datadog and Dynatrace and New Relic and Atlassian now have registered resources in this thing. So I look for like CloudFormation registry, I think, and you'll find.
Yeah, no, I was actually just curious on my own because I mean, because now you can write it ultimately just in Python. I'm just curious if people are releasing any of their own pip module, you know, modules I can just pip install to do more advanced stuff with CDK.
Yeah, well, there is an absolute ton of a Python code that's starting to appear on GitHub, but not in one place, right? It's like if you search for, well, just look for CDK Python, and you'll see a lot of interesting.
CDK construct for Chalice.
Yeah.
CDK construct for secrets. Yeah, so this is happening now.
It is. It's just, it's not like a NPM or something like that, right?
Not yet. But this is where you could totally see, like, you could start to see, like, an opinionated EKS CDK implementation distributed through pip.
Without any question, you'll see this.
Okay, that's cool. I'm going to share that in the channel. And, all right, then my next question was, let's see, which one do I want to focus on? So yeah, this is one that's kind of interesting. And you know how like more and more companies are using Kubernetes and EKS. CloudFormation has been traditionally just for managing like static infrastructure. Can we use CloudFormation or CDK or anything like that now to manage EKS? Inside of EKS.
So just last week, they had the AWS Global Summit Virtual. I don't know if you've ever been to one of those events, but I mean, it's the first time they've done it virtual. It's been like a live event in the past. And I actually really liked the virtual because there were sessions at the previous global summits I've gone to where, you know, everyone wanted to go to that session and there'd be a line around the entire Moscone Center to get into it, right? And you're like, I'm not getting in, you know, this room's only so big. But so a guy named Jason Umaker, who works for AWS, he did a presentation about EKS and CloudFormation and GitOps, actually, that was really cool. So I can paste that into.
Yeah, can you look up that if you find the session or his slides, that'd be kind of cool to see.
Yeah, here, let me. I've got links to both. Here's his.
One of the things I just stumbled on is this project here. CDK-K8S or CDK-8S. Have you looked at this at all?
Let me see. Let me go back to that. No, I haven't. I haven't seen this one. I don't think. Wait a minute. Let me. No, I haven't stumbled on that.
I think it's a pretty young project. Let's see, the oldest commit is 4 months ago. Okay. I don't know what time they actually even opened it up. So
here, let me.
I guess what CDK 8S does is much like what CDK does, generates YAML for CloudFormation. This generates YAML for pure Kubernetes resources that you can then
interesting. Import. That's
so it's
cool.
The same concept.
And I haven't seen that.
A similar interface then.
Yeah, that's very cool. Here's here, this is, here's the Global Summit link to the recording of it. I'll put this in here too.
By the way, TerraStack actually refers to CDK8S.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, that was one of the questions, things that came up, TerraStack. Has anybody toyed with TerraStack?
Yeah, I mentioned that guy earlier, that Sebastian Korfman. It's unbelievable what he's doing out there with this. I was like, amazed. I mean, he's sort of co-opted the whole CDK to generate Terraform, which is pretty amazing. I don't know how many other contributors he has. I just stumbled on this the other day, and I was blown away. This
now glues Terraform with CloudFormation with
it's really cool.
So like Brian Tai, who asked a question earlier, also posted one thing, like, you know, some people have been, or no, it wasn't Brian, actually, it was Blaze, like some people have been using like Jinja to generate Terraform code,
right?
This is doing it more formal, and yet this is different than something like Pulumi, where Pulumi is sitting on top of the Terraform providers, but not compiling down to Terraform code. So this ultimately compiles down to Terraform code?
Yeah. Yeah, he uses the JavaScript engine that generates the CloudFormation code to generate the Terraform code, apparently. I think it's like, let's see, what's it called? Let me, it's like JS.
It's JSII, I think.
II, yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Looks like a few very important things are missing though. Outputs and remote state.
Yeah, I don't know how long he's been working on this. I mean, this is already, it seems like it's—
Oh,
like,
yeah, look, well,
Yeah.
Unfortunately, wow. no updates also in that time, but so
it's just him, but he's like done an incredible amount of work in that short period of time, it looks like. Mm. I'll see.
So let's see, what would be, what are your favorite parts working with CFT? What are the strengths? You know, what would you change?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the funny things that I always say about it is that if something goes wrong with it, and I'll say these days for your benefit, because I'm almost always sure it's me, right? It's very reliable at this point, right? So. And that's what you want in an infrastructure as code tool, right? Is this reliability and repeatability, and that seems to be there. The other complaint that a lot of people had, a few years ago, or even a couple of years ago, I would say, is that, it took time for them to catch up to the pace of the resources, the new products that AWS was releasing. I mean, they were just so many new products.
I've heard that complaint a lot, that CloudFormation would lag. In fact, I think it's the reason why a lot of people move to Terraform, because Terraform used to be faster than implementing a lot of these things. When announcements come out now by Amazon, they almost always release the pull requests the same day.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. But I would say that AWS has gotten much, much better at, having, like I said, I think it's more of a first class citizen of AWS now than it was in the past. So, and just despite the fact that it is a proprietary tool that's exclusive to AWS. There's a huge community around it, and you can find out how to do things pretty in a pretty straightforward way. I mean, most of the stuff that's in my book, I would say, is out there in one form or another somewhere, and what I'm trying to do with the book is have it be a logical progression from the easiest stuff to the hardest stuff for the most part, and make it, explain it more than a blog would, because blogs are only a few hundred words usually.
You can't find everything on Medium.
Try to knit it together in a better way, So I think that's a big advantage that it has. But again, not necessarily versus Terraform, because, my book is actually, I'm 99% sure the editors tell me it's the first book about cloud formation, which is crazy,
What? That's unbelievable if that's true. I guess that just goes to show that it hasn't really gained that much attention outside of hardcore AWS enthusiasts. So that, one thing you were saying to me that I thought was really interesting when we talked earlier was how when you started writing this book, this was end of last year, there was a explicit conversation you had with the publisher, like, should we even talk about CDK?
Yeah, which is wild, right?
Yeah, and now that's what led to this massive renewed interest in CloudFormation.
Yeah, it's definitely a game changer for CloudFormation and the people using it. If you look at the whole developer self-service world, it's a key to that, right? It's really going to allow people to do things that ops people, let's say, for lack of a better way of putting it, wouldn't have wanted that to do. Right now they can potentially create an environment where developers are going to be able to spin up code from within their within the same repo, theoretically. So,
one thing that just hit me right now, I hadn't thought of or looked into, but what's really trendy, and I mean this in a positive way, what's really popular now, because it's become a lot more accessible in tools, at least outside of CFT, is policy enforcement and validation. Yeah. That's like this open policy agent a lot of us are using. What is there in line of like policy enforcement around CloudFormation? Is there an AWS service for policy enforcement that one would use with CloudFormation? Or?
Well, there are several, as there often is in AWS. There's as simple as stack policies, right? Then there are there's IAM roles that people use for this,
right?
And then there are there's service roles that you can control. And then there's also, the systems manager, right? Which you do have to pay for at this point, right? That can automate and control policies around this as well. And you can build interfaces yourself to.
What sounded interesting to me that I'm not familiar with was that stack policy thing. Is this where does that tie in? Can that prevent this stack from even launching? I think that's what I'm kind of looking
for. You can prevent people from even, from launching a stack with IAM, right? You can do it.
But you have to go through the hassle of running the stack, right? Like, you have to first, this is my presumption that from what I recall, you could start up that IAM stack, and then after some amount of time of it chugging away and trying to do it, it says, oh, you know, you don't have permission to do this.
Well, you can also, not only can you control not just the resources that the stack launches, which you can do with IAM, but you can also, you know, you've got assumed roles, so you can, you know, which is the best practice for CloudFormation, capabilities, but you can prevent people from even touching CloudFormation with IAM. They, you know, they can't do anything. They can't see the stacks. They can't run the stacks. They can't delete the stacks. You can control those things with IAM.
So it seems, which makes sense. So it seems like that is more at a lower level of granularity rather than like a higher, like business logic policy that you could have.
I would say that's a good characterization. Okay. And I don't know that they have another tool that gives you more granularity.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, CloudFormation. Yeah, so I bet that this is like the catch-all for everything these days. So it looks like OPA has something for CloudFormation.
Interesting.
This is Terraform here, but has anybody dabbled with CloudFormation and OPA?
Well, I definitely will.
Yeah, let's see here. It's since all my searches are related to Terraform, it knows that's what I want to see. But so, because the thing is with OPA is that it really supports most markup languages, and then there's also ConfTest. Let's see if ConfTest CloudFormation, that might do it. No. All right. Well, something to circle back on. I'd be curious about policy enforcement. Yeah. Let's see. So we are, we got about 10 minutes left on office hours. I guess, let's see here. Where should we, what are you most excited about? Let's like frame this in two parts. Like, where do you see, first of all, CloudFormation going from here? Like, is it done? Is it solved? Is it fixed? Or can it improve and grow? And then the other thing would be like, what are you most excited about cloud technology wise? Doesn't have to be CloudFormation, just what, you know, what's going on in Amazon or other clouds that you're most excited about?
Cool. Yeah, so I think just looking at AWS and looking at CloudFormation, I would say that, you know, a lot of the areas energy they're putting into it are in the CDK. And in making serverless easier, and I would say the Kubernetes stuff, right? I think that we're going to see much more of that. Presentation I posted in there, that Jason, I think people will find that pretty interesting if you take a look at that. He's launching, he's using the CDK to do a Postgres database, and then everything else pretty much is in EKS. So it's a very good talk that he gave. Hopefully people will take a look at that. But so then as far as the cloud goes, you know, I just think that we're at an early adopter phase here, which is crazy for those of us that have been around for so long, and seeing these things evolve Yeah, so that's pretty neat. I think they're gonna, like everybody, they're gonna do more with the operators inside of Kubernetes.
The operators are powerful.
Yeah.
That is.
So this was a really good talk that I enjoyed the heck out of and got a lot of ideas from. So I wanted to share that. But, you know, so the cloud in general, like today I read that Dell has taken one of their, insane, I work a lot with game developers, right? And so the extremely high-end storage, like Compellent and Isilon and things like that, it's so expensive. They've taken one of the file systems from Compellent, and they're going to make it work on AWS. They're going to put it in the cloud, right? And I just think that's, you know, I wasn't that blown away by VMware on AWS, although so many people at AWS are, right? Because it's like lift and shift, right? But this has so many more applications. I mean, you know, you've got some non-enterprise capable or lesser enterprise capable ways of doing storage that keep getting better in AWS, right? And now you've got this thing where they've made this thing open, they've made it available, it's going to work in the cloud, it doesn't require you to buy $1 million worth of Compellent storage from Dell, right?
Yeah. So we got a question from Dan. It's, I think, you know what, Dan, I think we're going to take that and the EKS question, maybe answer that next Wednesday on office hours. Your question was relating to using Argo with for GitOps. I know we have a member in our community doing a lot with that. Forget his name off the top of my head at the very moment. Dan, maybe. So we can certainly talk more about Argo for that. Argo is kind of in the category there with Flux as well for GitOps.